This is the Fun Kids Bookworms podcast, where you can find out about the best books from the people who write them. I'm Bex, and this week we have got loads of extra special adventures in our very Christmassy episode. We're going to check in with the QI elves, we've got a chat with Serena Patel about her new compilation book, The Very Merry Murder Club, and we've got a reading from actual comedian, writer, and legend, Ben Miller. So first up, you know what, let's check in with the QI elves. They have a brand new book telling us all about the answers to kind of literally everything. So let's check in and see what questions they've been asked and what answers they've given. I am joined right now by Anne Miller and Emily Jupitus, two QI elves. Hey guys, how you doing?
Hello.
Hello. Good, thank you.
Oh my goodness, I am so happy to have you back on Fun Kids, because so last year we had you on and I'd read your book Funny You Should Ask, and this year you've got Funny You Should Ask again, and you've got even more questions packed into it.
We do, we've been working away on that, yeah, since the last one, as many questions as we can fit in a hardback book. Yes.
I love it so much. So Anne, tell me, I guess we have to tell all the listeners, just to give some background, what exactly is a QI elf?
So a QI elf, we are a company, our full name is Quite Interesting Limited, and basically our job as elves is, elf is kind of a catch-all term, and basically it means that our main job is to find interesting information, so really fun facts. So for example, there's one in the book about the longest anyone's ever left a light on is 120 years. That's a bulb that's been going at a fire station in California. And so we gather all these bits of information that we find really fun, and then we sort of bundle them together.
I know you'll be asked this question all the time, but is there a particular question in the book that blew your mind? Was there one, Anne, you can go first, if there's one question or answer that you were like, oh my goodness, this is amazing.
I just couldn't believe I didn't know this. I don't know, have you heard this fact that the average person, sorry, this is a little bit gross, but it's sort of Halloween-y, so maybe it's okay. Have you heard this fact that the average person swallows 8 spiders during a lifetime?
Mm-hmm. I've heard something similar to that, yeah.
So I've heard it and just thought, oh, that's just a thing we know, like it's just a fact. It's absolutely not true, which is on the one hand a massive relief, and on the other hand incredibly interesting. So it comes from they can exactly trace it back to an article in 1993 by a journalist called Lisa Holst. And basically she was writing about the fact that people will believe anything they read online. This was back in the 90s, so the internet was quite new. So she made up these sort of silly facts to show that once someone read them, they'd become true. And one of them was this one about swallowing spiders. But it kind of has become in that sort of, it's a thing people sort of think they know, think they've heard, but it's not true. It was made up as an example of misinformation spreading. Wow. And I find that both a huge relief and fascinating about the way things move around and the way, you know, things become that we think we know something, but where did we learn it from?
That's amazing. Emily, how about you?
I really like the questions, you know, the ones that sort of follow you around, kids ask, and they sort of, kids tend to ask them, and then they follow you throughout your life and you never get round to sort of looking up. I love those kinds of ones. So in this book, it was, are zebras black with white stripes or white with black stripes? And it's a classic question that's kind of always asked in jest. And I just was remembering going, that must actually have an answer. And we looked into it and I remember, and there is an answer, and it's that they are black with black and white stripes, in that if you shave a zebra, their skin is black. So they're actually black underneath all of the fur, and then the fur grows on top and the fur is black and white striped, but their skin is black. So there is an answer that they are black with black and white stripes.
That's so good. And you know, that's the kind of thing that, like, everybody listening and me right now, that'll just stick with me. That's one of those things that I'm just like, I think in the future I'll just know that fact. That's because I get the impression you guys must go through so many. Do you learn it, research it, put it out there, and then do you forget it immediately, or do these facts always stick with you? Han, how does it work for you?
For me, and unfortunately for my friends and family, they come up when I hear a keyword. So someone's talking about, like, I don't know, having a cheese sandwich, I'll be like, oh, I've got a fact about cheese. And you have to sort of rein it in a bit, because in the office, this is delightful, we do this all day. Whereas if you're, you know, like at someone's birthday party, they might not want to talk about tarantulas for the entire time. So you have to pick your audience.
Yeah, I tend to forget them as well. I'm very, very that sort of come out of the exam and it's immediately gone sort of thing. There are loads of stuff and I sit there going, something comes up and I think, I did know something about this. I definitely researched it. It's definitely in there somewhere. But yeah, like Anne says, you sometimes need the right keyword to actually bring the fact back to the forefront of the memory. And it just might not be in your rota of what you happen to be remembering that day. So a lot of things I do forget, but some of them do stick in there. And things like that, like the zebra one, ones that are a long-awaited answer to something you've been wondering for most of your life, and it finally comes. And when it's really sort of pleasing, when the answer is pleasing and the answer is sort of snappy, I find that's when it really does stick in there, which is one of the things we love about QI. And one of the whole things about the sort of message behind everything we do is to try and make as much information as possible snappy and fun and memorable, so it sticks in there a little more often.
You've also got a lovely kind of a few Christmas questions in the book as well. I guess perfect, because everybody's thinking, what should we get for Christmas? Do you guys have like a particular favorite Christmas fact as well?
Oh, that's a good question. I had a lot of fun looking into Christmas songs. That was really fun. So somebody asked us, how many Christmas songs are there? And I think, if I'm remembering rightly, this was a question we were asked for the radio, and we thought this is going to take a long time to answer. However, as Emily says, for the book, we've got a lot more words. We can play with this. My friend who loves music quizzes recommends this website, because every song that's charted in the top 100 since 1952, you can view it online. So you can look up all these songs and see what's there. So we started putting in the keyword Christmas to see what came up. And you find all these classics like Last Christmas and I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day. And then lots of different ones as well, like novelty ones by the Smurfs and Bob the Builder and different things like that. And it includes 12 different versions of White Christmas that all appeared at different times in there. So that's quite a lot. And then if you do words like Santa or Snowman, that brings up different words. And then that's only counting, obviously, pop songs that have charted. So when you then look at Christmas carols, the English Folk Dance Society and Song Society, they have a database of 3,500 Christmas carols.
Wow.
So that's different ones from the charts. And then obviously you've got ones all around the world as well. So basically, we think the number is impossible to count because there have been so many. And obviously, they're always being written every year in all around the world. So that number is getting bigger and bigger and bigger every time we hit Christmas. And I think that's quite fun. Like, it would probably be impossible to learn all of those songs, but quite a fun challenge, I think, to see how many you can get your hands on.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. The Now That's What I Call Christmas album would be jam packed if you get every possible Christmas song.
Yeah. Can you? Yep. It'd be so great. The disco would last for weeks.
Emily, how about you? What's your favourite Christmas fact?
I mean, I'm big on food. I'm very food orientated as a person. And so my sort of favourite Christmas fact from the book was about, why do we call a Christmas pudding a plum pudding sometimes when there doesn't tend to have plums in it? The sort of original Christmas pudding wasn't even a cake. It was more of a sort of porridge. It was sort of wheat boiled with milk and spices, sometimes plain, but some recipes included, like, traditionally you could get this sort of porridge with beef, mutton, or even porpoise, like the dolphin.
What?
So yeah, the really old traditional recipes had some crazy things going on. But by the 17th century, it was like thickened with eggs. It used to get breadcrumbs in it, and it started to look a bit more like a sweet pudding that we sort of recognize these days. But it settled on, you know, by the Victorian era, it's, you know, kind of a pretty much a fruit cake, you know, the dried fruit, the sugar, the breadcrumbs, the spices and all of that. But still, you're like, where are the plums? Well, plum was an Elizabethan word that tended to describe all dried fruit, including the sultanas, raisins and currants and the things you do put in a plum pudding. So plum just used to mean the dried fruit, and it was a dried fruit pudding. So that's why it is actually called a plum pudding.
It's much snappier than sultana, raisin and or apricots and plums and cherries pudding.
Right, isn't it? It's about, you know, the alliteration is quite pleasing.
The alliteration and the lack of the porpoise in it as well.
Yes. I mean, a porpoise would, in, you know, follow along the alliteration, but a plum porpoise pudding is probably, might be pleasing to say, not so pleasing to eat, I imagine.
I bet your office is so much fun. I mean, the fun kids office is pretty fun, but I imagine the QIL's office is just a hive of activity. You must be just busy all of the time, just being like lots of whiteboards and blackboards everywhere. I feel like lots of posters all over the shop. Would that be right?
And a lot of books. The QI library is quite special. There's books that are arranged by subject. So there's, you sort of go and like browse one section, you'll find like an entire book on like the history of the baguette and things like that. And you're like, I want to read this book. I've got one on my desk right now, which is A History of the Fridge, which I'm very excited to read.
Yeah, Overheard in the QI office is a fantastic game because you just sort of wander in and, you know, the elves, if there's someone already in, you wander in and they'll look up and go, did you know? And just shout some sort of exciting thing they've just found out from the day across at you. And then you sort of run over and go, show me. There's so much of that.
It's a really, really good point, though, because I think the really key thing about what we do is everything we're finding out, we're generally finding out for the first time. Like, we're not sitting down and just saying, oh, I already know this. We're literally getting books about baguettes and fridges and snails and bricks and reading them until we get something that makes us turn to the next person and be like, you will never guess what I've just read about snakes. And it's a really fun way to just always, because this information is everywhere. It's just, you know, taking time to read, you know, the footnotes in books or the books that maybe haven't been touched for a while, or to find things on the internet or magazines, or even like, I once found a fact in the queue in the post office. It was, the fact was that the word stress is the word desserts backwards. And I just thought, that's very funny. Yeah. I've never seen it before. And once I was on a train and there was someone behind me reading jokes out of a joke book. And obviously like a joke, because I could sort of hear them because they were behind me. And they said, I didn't realize it was a joke book at first, because they said, do you know what cheese is made backwards? And I was thinking, oh, that's a strange question. As in, like, they start with the cheese and they turn it into milk, or, and then they went, Edam. And I was like, oh, it's spelled, Edam is spelled, made spelled backwards. And I was like, that is very funny. I'm going to remember that. And I have.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, those little things, it does kind of tell people you need to keep your eyes and ears open at all time, because you never know when you'll come across an amazing fact, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Eyes open, you never know.
Oh, brilliant stuff. Well, guys, thank you so much for chatting to us. Anne and Emily, that was awesome. And Funny You Should Ask Again is out. Everybody needs to go and buy it, because it's just something for everybody, including my favourite topic, Eurovision. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So, guys, thank you so much. And hopefully we'll speak to you soon for even more QI Elf projects. Thank you very much to the QI Elves. And next up in today's Christmassy show, we thought we'd chat to Serena Patel. Now, she's an amazing writer herself, but her and Robin Stevens have put together a new book with lots of different authors coming together to write their very own mini murder mysteries in the Very Merry Murder Club. Let's hear more from Serena. Serena Patel, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Hello, thanks for having me again.
Feels like speaking to an old friend back on the show. But this time, I mean, I should say, really, our listeners will know you as the author of the Anisha Accidental Detective series. But this time you've come back to us with a bit of a twist, a bit of a different type of book project, The Very Merry Murder Club. What is going on here?
Yes, I'm so excited to be bringing this to you. So this is an anthology of 13 authors, and readers hopefully will recognise some of the names that are on the anthology. And it's a twist on the traditional mystery genre. So it's bringing something fresh to the genre. Some of these writers already write mysteries, some of them don't. And we've just got a whole host of wonderful festive themed mystery stories for our readers to enjoy.
I have to admit, I saw this book it must have been announced a little while ago, and it did pique my interest, shall we say, because obviously I know you, Robin Stevens, and it's just such a good idea. And also I know Elle McNichol a little bit, so I knew that she's in the book too. You have got quite a great lineup of authors. You must be very happy with who's taken part.
Yeah, it's so exciting to be working with these authors. I mean, a lot of these authors I admire, I've read their work, and, you know, so it's a huge privilege for me to have my name on this book and to contribute a story. But yeah, we, right at the beginning when I was asked to be part of this project, we sort of had a wish list of who we would like to be involved. And that was really exciting to do. And thankfully, they all said yes. So we've been really lucky.
So can you give us some of the names of the people taking part?
Yeah, so we've got Abiola Bello, Annabelle Sammy, Benjamin Dean, Dominique Valente, Elle McNichol, Maisie Chan, Rupa Faruqi, E.M. Norrie, Nizrana Farouk, Patrice Lawrence, Joanna Williams, myself, and Shana Jackson. And then we've been illustrated by the amazing and uber talented Harry Woodgate. So it's just, the whole package is just phenomenal. I feel really proud of it.
It's, you know, you really should be. It's such a great book. And also, I mean, perfect as a present for Christmas, I imagine, but also perfect if you're a reader but you don't have time to sit down and read a full whole book. It's amazing to get these like bite-sized, perfectly crafted stories.
Definitely, yeah. I think that's the joy of it, really. If you want to sort of dip into something, you know, you don't have to read them all in order. You could just sort of pick one out, read that, and then come back to it later. And it's just a lovely gift edition. You know, we've got this amazing, I don't know if you've seen it, Bex, but under the dust jacket, there is the most wonderful illustration that Harry has put together, and it's got lots of little clues to each story in the illustration, in the scene. So, it's just a really special book to give as a gift.
Oh, I don't think I saw that. I have the PDF version online, so maybe I missed out. Oh my goodness. I'll go into a bookshop and have a look. Don't worry. I'll go and have a little check out. And of course, you've written a book, you've written a story for the book as well, which I have read and very much enjoyed. Can you tell, I mean, I don't want to, obviously you can't give it away, but can you tell the listeners a little bit about your story?
Yeah, so my story is called Silent Night, and in it we have a boy called Arjun who is having to stay at home. It's the beginning of the year, all the festivities have passed, but unfortunately for Arjun, he's had to have his tonsils out, and so he's having to stay at home for a little while to prevent infections. He hasn't been able to go back to school with all his friends, and he's a bit bored, and so he takes to watching his neighbours. Looks out of his window and sort of, you know, picks up on their habits and what they do at different times of the day. And then Arjun sees something which he thinks that to start with is very exciting because it's a bit of drama. He sees an argument, and then that kind of leads to some of the things that he shouldn't see. And then he decides that he needs to investigate. And I won't go any further than that.
Yeah, nicely done, I've got to say. Hard to write kind of like murder or darker stories for kids, or do you think, you know, I mean, I know obviously Robin Stevens as well does it anyway for her kind of day job, or do you, was it okay for you?
Yeah, I was kind of definitely a bit sort of worried about getting the tone right. Obviously Anisha is pitched slightly younger than the audience for Very Merry Murder Club, but I think I did okay. Yeah, just thinking about, you know, obviously not making it too scary, but having enough suspense and enough mystery to keep it interesting for the reader.
And was it fun to work with Robin as well, to pick the stories and to get them all together and to make the book?
Oh yeah, definitely. I was so honoured when I was asked. And yeah, Robin's an absolute legend within the kind of kidlit community, and obviously how I've read her books and, you know, admire her, what she's done with her series. And so yeah, it was just, it was a lot of fun, and to kind of come together and say, you know, well, this is kind of a dream project, who would you want to have involved, you know, what would we want it to look like? And Farshaw have been absolutely fantastic at sort of putting everybody together to make the book.
It's honestly, it's such a lovely book, and like I said, I was genuinely really excited when I heard it was coming out, because I was like, obviously, you guys I've interviewed quite a few times, and I know the names of the people in the book as well. I was like, this is such a good idea. I don't know why we don't have more anthology series, because it's such a fun way of getting more readers, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're starting to see a few more, aren't we? But yeah, you know, it's, as you say, it's got, I think you kind of get the best of both worlds with an anthology, because you're getting to be introduced to authors you might not have already read. And then that might make you want to pick up some of their other books. But also it's, you know, it's bite sized, it's easy to kind of pick up a story and then put it down. And yeah, just a really nice book to have.
It really is. Speaking of nice books to have, before I let you go, I have to ask, how is the Anisha series going? What do you have next on the cards?
The Anisha series is going really well. Thank you for asking. We've just recently released Showstoppers, which is the fourth book in the series, which is all about a school musical which gets sabotaged. And I'm currently coming to the end of my edits on book five, which is out next spring.
Well, how many books are you planning in the Anisha series, or do you not know? You're just going to keep going?
Well, we've got six planned at the moment, so watch this space. I don't quite know what's going to happen after that. But I'm starting to write book six now, and that one's got a bit of a Halloween theme, so watch out for that.
Oh, brilliant. Well, we'll get you back in the studio, hopefully, in September, October next year.
Yes.
In the meantime, Serena, thank you so much for telling us all about the Very Merry Murder Club. And I guess I should really say, have a Merry Christmas yourself.
Yes, and to you too.
Now it's time for our big recommendation of the month. Aaron Slater, Illustrator, is a book that's kind of taken our eye, shall we say. It's by Andrea Beattie, and it's a story about the power of art, finding your voice and telling your story, even when you're slightly out of step with everybody else in the world. So in the book, you've got Aaron. He loves listening to stories, and one day he wants to write them himself. But the thing is, when it comes to reading, he's not the best. It's not his favourite thing in the world. And he feels like being a storyteller is out of reach, until he realises that he could become an illustrator instead. The book is printed in a dyslexia-friendly font, so it's really accessible, really fun, really easy to read, and it's just such an awesome book. That is Aaron Slater, Illustrator. Now, before I go, I did promise you a reading from one of my old pals. Oh my goodness, I love him so much. I think I've spoken to this man more than I've spoken to some members of my actual family. It is comedian and writer Ben Miller.
There's a magic fountain, and if you drink from the fountain, that's when you can swap bodies with somebody. So this is the bit where George and Midnight swap bodies. George was just dabbing a drop of water on his own tongue when he heard a slurping noise beside him. Midnight had climbed up from his seat on the grass and now had his head in the fountain, taking a noisy drink. George's jaw dropped. Midnight, stop! Don't drink the water, he yelled. But it had been a long, hot day, and Midnight was very thirsty. George desperately grabbed the dog by its collar and tried to pull him back. George, don't be so mean, protested Coco. He's really thirsty. There was a blinding flash of moonlight, and George began to feel dizzy. George? Asked Coco. Are you okay? I've cast the spell by mistake. Coco laughed. That's crazy. I'm serious, Coco. Muttered George, fighting to stay awake. I'm turning into a dog. Oh. Oh. And everything went dark. George? George! He could hear Coco's voice calling him. George opened his eyes. Everything was blurry, as if he was underwater. The colours he could see looked like they were underwater too, just blues, yellows and greys. He tried to rub his eyes, but instead of a hand, up came a black furry paw.
Big thank you to Ben Miller and Serena Patel and the QIL for telling us all about their books in this Christmassy edition of the Fun Kids Bookworms podcast. Remember to get in touch if you want to listen to me. You can check me out on your DAB digital radio, online, on the free Fun Kids mobile app and on your smart speaker. Just say Play Fun Kids every weekday from 4 p.m. Have an amazing book-filled Christmas. See you.